This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 11, Left-Handed Coaching. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the implications of a study which has found that batting left-handed, if you're a right-handed person, might help your batting. And what does that mean for the implications of coaching? We get into that in some detail with a question about how we coach youngsters these days, and we help a fast bowler find an action by helping him copy someone else. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to a bit of cricket. And it doesn't matter who you are or where you are. You could be in a corridor waiting to get into an office, for example. Or you might be on what I think is a building site, like I am this week. So if you hear any strange noises from me, that's what's going on there. Someone's making something exciting. Can't quite work out what it is. Or you could be on your Easter holidays. And that's exactly what Mark Garraway is doing. Normally, of course, he is in charge of things at Millfield School Cricket. But right now, I think, Gareth, you're at home, aren't you?
I am today, but we've had a course going on all week, which has been good. So I've jotted in and out of that because there's far more appropriate people to be leading that course who do a far better job than me. So I was assistant coach yesterday, which was quite nice. And then next week, we've got Gary Kirsten doing a course with us, which would be great to have him back with us. And then I'm flying out to the West Indies to do some stuff with Andrew Strauss. So, yeah, all good.
And while Gareth picks up all those names that he's just dropped, let's catch up.
I had a chat with Ian Botham the other day as well. I've just chatted with him.
Let's catch up with Sam Lavery, who is also in charge of things, but at Portsmouth Grammar School. He's a cricket professional there. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, David. No names to drop. No big ones at the moment, I'm afraid.
No.
And I've been coaching Henry Wolfe, who's an under 14 at Portsmouth Grammar School, if anyone's kind of recognising him. But that's about the extent. Fantastic. Today.
You never know. He might eclipse all of those ones, mate. You never know, eh?
Well, he's got a chance.
There you go.
Got a chance.
Now, I don't know whether Henry is a left or right-handed batter, but we did get some interesting research this week regarding batting left-handed and batting right-handed, and it's something which has been around for a while, this idea of being right-handed in the way that you throw or bowl or open a door, but batting in what's traditionally been called left-handed. So we know of many examples of professional players who have done this very successfully, but a recent study has found out that you're 7 times more likely to become a successful batsman if you are right-handed but you bat left-handed. So what kind of implications does that leave us? Is this something where we should start looking at coaching youngsters to bat the wrong way around, as it were?
Well, I think yes is the answer to that, but I thought yes for a long time, not off the back of this article and this bit of research, but I think at the younger ages, definitely, and I look at my son, he's got a limited interest in cricket, nothing more than that, and really only tends to play it when his cousins are around. But he hits a reverse sweep brilliantly, yet stands right-handed batters because that's what he's seen. You know, he's seen me batting right-handed or trying to, and he's copied a bit of that, which is similar to some of the things that were put in the research, that we tend to copy those role models or those closest to us that we see doing stuff. But actually, when I bowl the ball or throw the ball outside leg stump, he turns around and whacks it through point or right-handed point, which is really interesting. So for him, if he wants to pursue cricket, which I'm not sure whether he does, but if he does, then we'd definitely experiment at the age of 7 or 8, which is where he is now. We're trying a bit of left-handed and right-handed. And I've often thought that it's something that at the younger ages, you know, from a sort of infant side of things through to, 9, 10, 11, somewhere around there, that we should experiment with these things. And I reckon that there's definitely something in it. I've played with people who have done that. David Gow, way back, was somebody who did it. And equally, I played with a guy in the same team as David Gow called Kevin James that used to bowl and bat left-handed and then throw right-handed. So, again, it goes back to me to let's give people the opportunity to experience as many things as they want and they can do and give a go at both things, throwing right and left-handed, bowling right and left-handed, batting right and left-handed, and see which one fits with them. We've seen an example recently in the under-19s of somebody who can bowl left-arm spin and right-arm spin. You know, let's have a go at that. So to me, at the younger age groups, I think we should take the shackles off, really, and let them have a go at everything.
Levis, do you think there is an argument once someone is sort of set on something that they can change? Because there are examples of players who have changed their mind, aren't there?
Yeah, we've got examples of people who've definitely have changed at some stage, and it's generally working on the time scale that you've been in a particular habit already, and the time scale that's also ahead of you in which you can change, and also the commitment that you're willing to kind of make to making that adjustment. As Gareth said, if you're 6 or 7 years old, it's probably an ideal chance to try all these different methods and see what works for you. And equally, you'd understand someone if they were kind of 35 years old and had played cricket for 25 years already, that maybe changing from right-handed might be a little bit more ambitious or unrealistic, given that they might only be playing for another 5 or 10 years. So I definitely think we can expose them to the opportunity. One of the things I would suggest is it's probably a little bit of a... not a weakness of the old method, but probably highlights one of the previous kind of coaching methods that was kind of pushed out across coaching boards around the world, which was do it like this. So everyone had to learn to demonstrate things, and as a result, people would copy. And that's definitely something that we try not to do as much these days, is saying, I do it like this, you should do it like this. And it's trying to communicate in a different way to try and allow people to do it. And often we talk about chasing the outcome a little bit more. So saying, hit the ball over there and do it the way that you want to do it. And then potentially refining that. So, slightly more... a slightly more modern or freer way of coaching to allow people to find the method that suits them, rather than being a bit more kind of instructive, which it probably has been in the past.
I've got a good story about that. I did my old NTA coaching certificate with Ralph Deller many years ago, and he told me that he failed the first time he tried to get his coaching badge. He failed because he was asked to bowl an away swinger and it didn't swing. So that's how the demonstration of skills has changed over the years. If you couldn't bowl an away swinger or a leg break many years ago, you couldn't be a coach. And now it's slightly different from that. But why not try it, I guess, is the question. Is that something maybe that governing bodies can sort of document and say to coaches when they're helping them become coaches, the level, you know, in the UK, the level one, the level two, saying to them, don't be restricted by the way that a kid picks up the bat the first time, you know, get them to try it the other way around. Or does that already happen?
Well, I think it's crept in now. I mean, I've not been involved in too many level ones and twos in recent years, but certainly level three wise, and we're having an increasing number of coaches that are working with younger age groups at level three now, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
And we certainly don't put any barriers or any ceilings on anything. And, you know, for guys that have been coaching a long time, I suppose, because of the experience that you've given there. I mean, I nearly failed my level two on the fact that I couldn't bowl a googly. I spent the whole of the previous week trying my best to learn how to bowl it because I was so worried about not being a good coach. Because you've got to be able to bowl one of those, haven't you? I think we are getting a bit more open around that sort of thing. But the guys that have been through the old system, I suppose, found it quite difficult to make the adaptation to the new one. And I think we might have a question which probably gives a bit of insight into that coming up. So don't want to give too much away before we get to our questions. But I think we're moving in the right direction, definitely. And all of the stuff that was done before was brilliantly well-intentioned, was a fantastic starting point for the game, and probably the reason why we're able to watch cricket as we are at this present moment in time in the middle of the world T20, which is just incredibly exciting. You know, watching Kohli bat the other day in a conventional fashion, but with a modern twist, was just wonderful.
And speaking of which, you can see an analysis of that on the Pitch Vision website at the moment. A few screenshots of him batting and some tips for people who want to maybe take a couple of ideas from Kohli into their own game. But let's get to the questions. Before we do that, let's do the yes-no round, which is three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more the team want to say. I've got the questions, so let's fire away. First question, bowling well at the captain in nets increases your chance of selection.
Yes.
Second question, too much stopping to review during practice can be bad.
Yes.
Third question, it's risky to play safe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Look at that, all the yeses, lovely. Okay, so as previously trailed, we are going to get into the questions now. A couple of questions that are sent in. We do our best to answer those questions, and whether we answer them to your satisfaction or not, we do give out a prize at the end, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions in to us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com. And that's what Stuart did. So Stuart has a question about coaching. And he says, I recently acted as a support coach to three club colleagues who've just finished their Level 2 Coaching Children course, which for anyone listening outside of the UK, that's one of the more common coaching courses that happens across the UK. He says, I'm concerned over the lack of seemingly complete absence of teaching of basic technical skills of the game on the course. Do you feel the same? And could this have a detrimental effect on this generation of young cricketers? Or are there more potential Kevin Petersons out there than I think there are?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I hear a lot of people commenting on, actually, that there isn't a lot of technical information there, and not that we're trying to kind of restrict players in saying this is how you do it, as we were just kind of discussing there, but having an understanding of movement and how power is generated and how momentum is created and those kind of things is still really important to be a really important area of understanding for coaches, whether they're going to kind of instruct that information or they're going to just observe and be aware of that information as they're coaching through a session. So I would think that a lot of people would probably find it useful to be included. However, the application of how we then manage that information, how we use it in a session is pretty important, that we don't go around saying do this, do that, do the other, and that we have that information and we use it at the right time, and also on top of that we make sure that we're applying it to the right degree, so we're not imposing ourselves on cricketers. One of the big things I would say is that a lot of coaches that I've met who've got a bit of an understanding probably aren't as confident in the information they've got, purely because it hasn't necessarily been backed up in what they've read or what they've received or what they've been told in that environment. So purely from a confidence point of view of the coaches, and we're always talking about building confidence in players, and building confidence in coaches is also a key thing, then maybe having an element of that or even discussing the absence of it would be useful to some people to try and help them understand how the kind of technical aspect is going to be coached, well, how they can coach it when they do get back to their clubs or their schools or wherever it might be, and they are taking sessions.
Well, I think discussion is absolutely perfect for this, and I think Sam struck the nail on the head there, really. My first question to Stuart, if I was in a bar with him and we were having a beer, is what is his understanding of technique? What's his interpretation of the key technical principles of the game? Because that's your starting point for a discussion. And, you know, one of the most basic ones, I suppose, is that you've got to play straight. And, you know, what is the definition of straight? And I can remember way back doing a batting session with Desmond Haynes. And I said to him at the beginning of one winter, you know, I want to learn to play straighter. I want to be able to hit the ball straight. And he bowled me on the bowling machine a number of different half volleys. And even as a professional cricketer, for some reason, I got it into my head that I needed to hit the ball down the ground. And he's told me that, no, you need to hit through the ball. So if the ball's outside off stump, way outside off stump, you're not going to hit that down the ground. You're going to hit directly through the ball. And that's, you know, even as a pro cricketer, I suppose, with all of the technical basis that I've been given through my informative years as I was being coached by a variety of different coaches, my understanding, and this was 6 years in, was that I needed to play the ball back down the ground more often. Well, you know, you do if the ball's in the right place to play back down the ground. So again, that's a discussion about technique that took me a long way into my own career to have that proper discussion. So I'm completely with Labours, and I'm really interested to hear from coaches that listen to this show is what is their understanding of technique? Because when I started coaching, admittedly I was playing at the time, but when I started coaching, everybody needed to bowl sideways on. Well, we know from watching the game, and even at the time we knew from watching the game, that there were some fantastic exponents of different methods of bowling. Malcolm Marshall probably being the prime one at that time, who didn't conform to the manual that was present, you know, it was out there at the time, but so many of us were basing our coaching upon. So over time, I think we've picked up a number of different techniques. And to me, really, technique is the thing that each individual does to get the job done. And the more we get an understanding of that, each individual that's standing in front of us about what they do to get the job done, the better. So an example would have been in the West Indies when Malcolm Marshall was running in from an acute angle and bowling with a chest on action with his right shoulder doing pretty much everything for him. I'm sure that some really well-intentioned people wanted to turn him sideways and get him pointing sideways to his target. But he found that he couldn't do that. I'm sure that that would have happened because that was the world that we were in. But then he worked out his own technique. Maybe the coaches that were working with him worked out his technique of getting success, and they let him go, or he just was stubborn enough to find his own way. And you know, that's what I think now is what gets the job done. Because Kohli gets the job done in a different way to Dhoni, yet they're both very, very good at finishing games. Josh Butler, who scored a fantastic innings the other day against Sri Lanka, does it in a different way to a David Warner or to a Jaya Wardner or whatever, all of which are really, really successful. So get to know the techniques of each person as opposed to putting one on top of them would be my suggestion, because ultimately performance and success is what we're all after.
If you start with technique, then you automatically start trying to think of, you know, specific things that are going to work for as many people as possible. But if you start with the end of what you're trying to achieve, with scoring a run, hitting a boundary, taking a wicket, putting the ball in the right place, then that is going to lead on to the technique that works best for that person. And if you start there and work backwards, rather than saying, okay, what is the technique that is going to achieve this? I feel like that's a good way to sort of flip your thinking around a little bit, and instead of going, well, you know, I've read that in the, you know, MCC coaching manual, you must do this, this, and this in order to hit the ball straight. So that's the only way that I can do it. You start with thinking, how can I hit the ball between those two cones over there?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a framework, wasn't it? That's all that MCC handbook was. It was a starting point, a framework that everything else has come off the back of. So it's certainly not being critical of the manuals that have come out over the history of time, because it's fantastic. It's got us to where we are now. But and loads of people love frameworks. You know, they want their framework to coach from and by. But ultimately, we only have to really watch a game of cricket and watch any of his T20 now, not just for the funky shots, but just a different way that people go about doing pretty much the same thing. And it's fantastic to see. That's why world events are wonderful, because there's that collection of cricket, isn't it? It's on every day. There's different teams, different players playing every day. And it's fantastic for us to watch that. So, yeah, starting point for me is discussion around what is technique to each individual person. But ultimately, coaching the outcome back.
I think also it's very easy in a world where there's a YouTube video for everything, that if you do a Google of how do I play a cover drive, you'll get 5 tips on how to play a cover drive, and they tend to be things that work for most people, but they aren't necessarily the thing that's going to work for the person, that particular person watching that particular video. So that's where it's very easy to fall into that. All I need to do is follow these five tips and I'll be a better batsman. But actually, it's a lot more nuanced than that, isn't it, Lavers?
Yeah, there's loads of different approaches you can take, and it's finding what fits the individual or what fits you or what fits the situation. So yeah, there's a lot more to it than saying I'm prescribing this to you because this is what fixes people, this is what makes them better. However, I think we're definitely starting to understand how different elements of people's technique or different elements of the way people are made up link together. So maybe we can be aware of if you do a certain thing, we can be aware that maybe something else ties in quite well with that. And something we talk about quite a lot is batters and how they stand or bowlers and how they move. And we know that if a batter stands in a certain way, then we're more likely to move in a certain way. And that's just really simple information for us now that does make it a little bit more applicable in that we can be quite specific, but with a general group as well. So we know that if someone stands with their feet closer together, for instance, they're more likely to be effective if they focus on moving with their head or whatever it might be. So even though we're not across the board, and maybe in terms of a coach education structure, we're maybe not quite where we want to be, the information that coach education structure is starting to develop is becoming really good. It's then got to be communicated and it's got to get out there to people so that they not only understand how to coach, but they understand how this message is trying to be spread throughout the players and the coaches around the country.
It's interesting, David. I'm out in a few weeks' time where the ECB are actually going out to deliver some coach education to the West Indies Cricket Board. So we're going out to Barbados, which is obviously really tough for us all to spend a week out there and run some of the modules that we run on our Level 3 programme. And that's going to be for the state coaches, for the high-performance coaches. And they've requested it off of the back of the fact that we've known West Indies cricket actually to be free, to be, you know, the sort of hallmark of that 1970s, 1980s versions of their teams of being that free team that just did stuff in their own way. But actually what they're finding now is that they've become very sort of rigid, I suppose, in the way that they're coaching around the Caribbean. And they're looking for different ideas and maybe a bit more freedom to get back to those halcyon days where it seemed like everybody batted a little bit differently, from Greenwich to Haynes to Gomes to Richards and Lloyd, all did things a little bit differently, but were absolutely phenomenal. So, the West Indies are obviously putting together a good 2020 side, but they want to be able to compete over all three formats of a game and build a system in their own backyard where they can develop those types of players that can do that and can be the adaptable people like the Roots and the Kohlis that can adapt through all three ranges of the game.
Interestingly, I ran on a much smaller scale, a coach education session at Perrin's School, which is just outside Winchester, last week. And all I actually did was, a week prior to the course, just kind of said, right, could everyone send me an email of what they'd like to learn? And top of the list for almost everyone was technique. And a lot of them had an introductory sort of cricket coaching on. A couple of them had a level two, but technique was what they wanted to understand. And the way I tried to deliver it was very much in the way we've discussed it, in the understanding principles of movement and power and how kind of outcome-based goals can work to get people and a few guidelines around that. And suddenly, without any new information, but just having an understanding that there isn't a prescription or there isn't a set way that things must be done, they just felt a lot more confident, and they communicated that they were felt a lot more aware of how they could direct their own coaching going forwards, because they felt a little bit in the dark or a little bit clouded about how they could prescribe a technical change to someone or identify whether or not someone was doing something well or they weren't doing well. So that definitely, in terms of the discussion, there is a demand for people to know more about it and understand more about it. And it sounds like West Indies guys out there, they're looking for the balance, and we're looking for the balance as well. And some are maybe on either side of the fence at the moment, just trying to work out how they can get that balance that suits all.
I guess it's almost a relief when you realise that you don't have to know every tiny little technical nuance of the perfect way, because there is no perfect way. The way to do it is to work with a player and help them work out what works for them. Then you're working with someone then, and it sort of takes the pressure off having to have this incredible, detailed, technical, biomechanical knowledge. And suddenly it's about, you know, helping someone understand themselves and get to the root of things themselves. And that's a lot more interesting, I guess, to most people than simply having a list of bullet points that they have to go through.
Absolutely. And that reinstalls the coach-player relationship rather than a teacher or lecturer or dictator style relationship, where it is, this is what you must do. I've told you what to do, so go and do it. And in the past, that was how I saw a lot of coaching being done. And it still probably is how some coaching is being done, but that doesn't develop the relationship with the player and doesn't create the team environment with coaching staff as part of that team as it probably should do.
The interesting one on technique. I know we're speaking a lot about this, but it is, you know, it's a fantastic question, Stuart. Thank you very much for it, first and foremost. But I wonder how many times technique has facilitated performance, technical coaching as such has facilitated performance, and how much it's impeded performance. Because you've got to have been absolutely spot on with your technique. If there is a technique that goes across everybody, then you're going to have to be absolutely sure about what you're doing in order to facilitate performance. And as we're beginning to work out, and as we watch more and more cricket and work with people on a more individual basis, you know, probably that generic message isn't going to hit every single bit. So I reckon, certainly going back to my own coaching when I was very, very rigid, because we all were, because that's all we knew, I reckon I probably impeded performance more than I facilitated it, which is a horrible thing to think about, but actually probably was true.
Next question's from Goha. And Goha says, I'm 18 years old, I'm a fast bowler, and my dream is to bowl very fast. But the problem is that I haven't chosen any bowling action. I haven't seen any bowler that I want to follow. Tell me, how can I choose my own bowling action for bowling faster?
It's a great one. Just run up and sling it down as hard as you can, mate. It worked for Matthew Hoggard.
Self-reported,
That's his own words, not mine. And give it a go. That would be my starting point, really. I think it's great to have sort of role models in terms of what they're trying to achieve. I think it's limited as a bowler to have somebody that you're trying to copy, because as we've just discussed with the, you know, with a technical element of it, there's quite a lot of difference between the way that people want to operate and move and produce pace. But, you know, if you want to get into some biomechanical principles, then the Ian Pont, Stephen Jones stuff's pretty good, you know, because you'll get a great understanding of what the body needs to do. So I'd certainly get you going down that route. And certainly in the Ian Pont thing, there's a little bit of individuality around, you know, whether you're front on, side on, or you know, midway as well. So get involved in that if you want. But your starting point really has got to be, I'm going to run up and I'm going to try and ping this ball down as quickly as possible. I'm going to get somebody to video at me, and then I'm going to say to myself, do you know what? Who do I look like? What am I doing that they're doing? And then maybe narrow it down that way. But, you know, don't just try and copy everybody, because you get yourself in the right pickle.
I'd agree there. And honestly, I'd say that the things you want to copy are probably attitude, and rather than physical characteristics, because you're all slightly different. But if you copy someone's intent and their attitude and their commitment to what they do, that's probably a really good thing that you can take from people that you see, because you can be pretty sure that most people who've made it to the top of the game or to the higher levels have probably got a pretty good attitude towards the training and towards the bowling and towards how they prepare and how they review and all those kind of things. So if you are going to copy anything, I'd be looking at that. And then when you're a little further along the line and you've started to understand what type of bowling action that you have rather than what you want, you then, as Gareth said, you can kind of maybe put yourself alongside a person who's got some similar characteristics.
The interesting one for me, and I don't know if it's the same for you, Sam, but we've got 20-odd people on our fast bowling program, all of which bowl very differently. But there's some consistent themes that are going on in there, which are very, I wouldn't say tent peg related, but there's some real good generic stuff that's going on in all of their actions. But the bottom line is that they're being packaged up in their own body a little bit, which is fantastic. And I think, you know, that's a great thing to try and aspire to. But often when you ask them who their bowling role model is, when you've got an idea in your own mind what they look like and who they look like, they come up with a completely different name. So, you know, so what they're feeling and what they look like are often two very different things. What they're aspiring to and what they look like are often two very different things. And, you know, I always used to try and bowl like Ian Botham when I was growing up, because why wouldn't you? You know, you used to get a five for every test match. But I looked absolutely nothing like him when I bowled, and certainly didn't deliver the ball like him, that is for sure.
Good. Well, that was a brief one because we whittled on more with Stuart's question, but I think we've covered it well there. So let's leave it at that, shall we?
Yeah, it's soapbox time. David's on. No stopwatch required.
Well, the secret is I do use a stopwatch, but let's forget about that. What I wanted to talk about this week is change. We are going through a few changes at my club. And I, as you can imagine, I'm the type of person who likes to push changes forward as much as possible to see what happens. But cricket clubs tend to be quite conservative places. So I've come up against some resistance. We've had some good conversations about different areas where we can make changes and areas where we don't want to make changes. And the pushback has sometimes been frustrating for me. So what I've tried to do is compromise, to work with people who have an equal, perhaps even greater stake in the club than I do, and try and come up with something that is both going to help make changes that are going to help with people to improve, and also keep people happy who have done things in a certain way for a lot of years and they don't want to see any changes because they don't think that any changes need to happen. And when we get there, we're going to be in a good place. Okay. Okay, that is the end of the show for another week. There is one more thing we're going to do before we leave, which is to decide on the winner of this week's competition, the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had a couple of cracking questions, one from Stuart about teaching basics to kids, and one from Gohar about choosing a bowling action. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
Well, I don't think it's being disrespectful here, but Stuart's question was right up there, wasn't it? It got a fantastic discussion going. Go away, Stuart. Have your own discussions. Work out what technique means to you. And then amongst your group, get some conversation going and see if you can check and challenge that. I hear what you're saying. And it's great that you're doing some work with these younger coaches that are coming in. And I think in your discussions, you'll find the right way of adapting your practice or adapting their practice to get a positive response. But good luck with it, mate. Great question. Thank you.
Fantastic, thank you. And you can choose a prize from the list on pitchvision.com. And Gareth, if someone was listening to the show and they wanted to have their question answered and maybe also win that prize, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and on Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. You can listen to the show every week if you want to. There's many ways to do that. The easiest way is probably to go into your podcast app on your phone or whatever device you have and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us there. Tap the subscribe button. You can also listen to this show now on Facebook and on YouTube. If you head over to our YouTube channel, just go to YouTube and search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us there, or you can go to the Facebook page that I mentioned earlier, and we put that up every week as well on the Facebook page. You can get all the old shows as well by going to pitchvision.com/academy and clicking on the podcast link. And there you'll get all the old shows, all the old show notes. You can download it, you can stream it, you can do anything you like. So there's no excuse not to listen to the show. We will be checking on you, so make sure that you do it. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, boys.